Hello friends, we are on chapter 17 and this chapter 17 is very important for us to understand. Is there any limit up to which a bank can lend, or there is absolutely no limit for the bank to lend to any borrower, which can be an individual or a group? Before we go into the minute details, one thing has to be very clear in mind. A banker cannot lend up to any limits of his choice to a borrower who can be an individual or a group, because there are specific restrictions put on the bank by the Reserve Bank of India. So the basic objective of this chapter is to understand up to what extent the bank can lend to companies which can be an individual company or a group representing many companies into that group. There are specific RBI guidelines for avoidance of concentration of credit risk. So these limits on the credits that are offered or given by the bank to its companies or groups, the basic objective behind this restriction is to avoid concentration of risk. Because if we lend entirely to one particular industry, to one particular company or to one particular group, and in case something happens, a big chunk of money goes bad. And that's the reason RBI has decided and implemented a plan into which the credit can be rationed to an individual or a group of borrowers. Reserve Bank of India has advised the banks to fix the limits on their exposure to specific industries or sectors and has prescribed various regulatory limits on the bank's exposure. When we talk about exposure, it means simply how much lending can be made by the bank to its borrowers. And these exposure limits are applicable to both individual as well as group borrowers in India. In addition, banks are also required to observe certain statutory and regulatory exposure limits in respect of advances against investment in shares, convertible debentures, bonds, units of equity-oriented mutual funds, and all exposures of the venture capital fund. So, in this chapter, we are going to see various such exposure norms. So, let us first understand what is the purpose of these exposure norms. The purpose is to provide a framework of rules, regulations, instructions issued by Reserve Bank of India to all scheduled commercial banks. And this framework is relating to the credit exposure limits for both individuals as well as group borrowers, and the credit exposure to specific industry or sectors, and the capital market exposure of the banks. The basic aim of these exposure norms is for better risk management and avoidance of any concentration of credit risk. Because once you avoid the concentration of credit to any particular industry or sector, you automatically in one way manage the risk arising out of the concentration of credit into a particular industry or a sector. Now let us see what are the different ceilings that are put on credit exposure to individuals and group borrowers. The exposure ceiling limit is 15% of the capital funds in case of a single borrower and 40% of capital funds in case of a borrower group. So we need to understand these two particular limits for individuals. The limit is 15% of the capital funds, and for the group borrowers it is 40% of the capital funds. The capital funds for the purpose will comprise of the tier 1 and tier 2 capital as defined under the capital adequacy norms. So the first two tiers, tier 1 and tier 2, are considered for deciding the percentage, the ceiling limit for both individuals as well as the group borrowers. We also have exposure norms for NBFCs, and here we have two specific categories of NBFCs, one NBFC, another NBFC AFC. Let us understand the exposure norms for these categories of NBFCs. The exposure, both the lending and investment, including off-balance sheet exposure for bank to a single NBFC or an NBFC AFC, that is the asset financing company, should not exceed 10% or 15% respectively, as the case may be, of the bank's capital funds as per its last audited balance sheet. So for NBFC, the limit is 10%. For NBFC AFC, the limit is 15%. Exposure of a bank to infrastructure finance companies, that is IFCs, should not exceed the 15% of the capital funds as per the last audited balance sheet, with a provision to increase it to 20% of the same on account funds on lend by the IFC to the infrastructure sector. So these are the exposure norms for NBFCs. Next, we also consider the norms for consortium arrangements. Whenever lending is made under consortium arrangements, the exposure limit will also be applicable to lending under the consortium arrangements. So exposure arrangements, consortium arrangements also have to follow the exposure norms. What happens in case of a divestment program of Government of India? On account of the bank's financing for acquisition of PSU shares, public sector undertaking shares, under the Government of India divestment programs, if any bank is likely to exceed the regulatory ceiling of single or the borrower or the group borrower limit, then RBI may consider relaxation on specific request from the bank in single or group credit exposure norms, and this can happen on a case-to-case basis. So RBI has the flexibility of considering under such situations. Now we have seen the exposure limits for individuals and groups, even for NBFCs and in other cases. Now we will understand who are exempted from such exposures. Rehabilitation of sick or weak industrial units. This is the category number one. The ceilings on single or group exposure are not applicable to the existing or additional credit facilities, including funding of interest and liabilities granted to weak or the sick industrial units under the rehabilitation packages. The second category in this exemption list is the food credit. Borrowers to whom the limits are allocated directly by the Reserve Bank of India for food credit will be exempt under this ceiling. Next category in the exemption list is guarantee by Government of India. The ceilings on single or the group exposure limit would not be applicable where principal and interest are fully guaranteed by the Government of India. We have some more categories in this exemption list. Loans against own term deposits. When a bank gives loans against its own term deposits, loans and advances, both funded and non-funded facilities, guarantees against the securities of the bank's own term deposits may not be reckoned for computing the exposure to the extent the bank has a specific lien on such deposits. Next category is exposure on NABARD. The ceiling on single or group exposure will not be applicable to exposure assumed by bank on NABARD. The individual banks are free to determine the size of exposure of NABARD as per the policy framed by their respective board of directors. Now friends, having understood the limits for individuals and groups, we also seen who are exempted from all this. Now we understand the various definitions that are connected with these exposure norms. The first definition consists of the exposure itself. What do you mean by exposure? Exposure shall include the credit exposure, which can be funded and non-funded credit limits, and investment exposure including underwriting or similar commitments. The sanction limits are outstanding, whichever are higher shall be reckoned for arriving at the exposure limits. Next definition is measurement of credit exposure of derivative products. For the purpose of exposure norms, bank shall compute the credit exposure arising on account of the interest rate and foreign exchange derivative transactions and gold, and this would be done using the current exposure method. The current exposure method requires the periodical calculation of the current credit exposure by marking these contracts to markets, thus capturing the current credit exposure. So this current exposure method is very, very important for when we have this measurement of credit exposure of the derivative products. What is credit exposure? Credit exposure comprises various elements such as all types of funded and non-funded credit facilities, the facilities extended by way of the equipment leasing, hire purchase financing, as well as the factoring services. Investment exposure also needs to be understood. Investment exposure comprises of the investments in shares and debentures of the companies, the investment in the public sector undertaking bonds, investment in commercial papers as well. we have referred the individual ceilings on the basis of the capital funds, so we also have a definition for capital funds. The capital funds for the purpose will comprise the tier 1 and tier 2 capital, and this tier 1 and tier 2 capital is as defined under the capital adequacy standards, and this would be as for the published accounts on March 31st of a previous year. Then we have credit exposure to industry and certain sectors, like fixation of sectoral limits. Now we are actually looking to exposure norms that are applicable to our industry and the sectors. Let us first look at the fixing of sectoral limits. Apart from limiting the exposure to an individual or a group of borrowers, as we have seen in our previous slides, banks may also consider fixing internal limits for aggregate commitments to specific sectors such as textiles, jute, tea, etc., so that the exposures are evenly spread over the various sectors, and again this is specifically to avoid concentration of risk. These limits would be fixed by the bank with regard to the performance of different sectors and the risk pursued in these sectors. The limits so fixed will be reviewed periodically and revised as necessary. So that is also a review factor involved into fixing of such limits when we consider the sectors. Unhedged foreign currency exposure for corporates. Foreign currency loans above $10 million or such lower limits may be deemed appropriate. Vis-a-vis the bank's portfolios, the exposures can be considered and should be extended by banks only on the basis of a well laid out policies of boards with regard to hedging of such foreign currency loans. So here the board's consideration is very important when we consider unhedged foreign currency exposure of the corporates. Next we look at is the exposure to real estate. Banks should frame comprehensive prudential norms relating to ceilings on the total amount of the real estate loans, such as a single group, exposure limits for such loans, margins, security, repayment schedule, availability of supplementary finance, and the policy here again should be approved by the bank's boards. Next we look at exposure to leasing, hire purchase and factoring services. Banks have been permitted to undertake leasing, hire purchase and factoring activities departmentally. So this provision is made, or this permission is given for the banks to undertake such activities departmentally. Banks should maintain a balanced portfolio of equipment leasing, hire purchase and factoring services vis-a-vis the aggregate credit. Their exposure to each of these activities should not exceed 10% of the total advance. So this 10% ceilings is specifically meant for exposure to leasing, hire purchase as well as the factoring services. Next is bank's exposure to the capital markets. Here rationalization of norms in terms of the base and the coverage are mentioned. Components of capital market exposure in this particular category, bank's capital market exposure would include both their direct exposure as well as indirect exposures. There are specific limits prescribed on the bank's exposure to the capital markets. Let us look into that. First, we look at a statutory limit on shareholdings in the company. When we talk about statutory holdings, the statute is the Banking Regulation Act 1949. To be more precise, Section 19, Subsection 2 of the Banking Regulation Act 1949 states that no banking company shall hold shares in a company, whether as pledgee, mortgagee or absolute owner, of an amount exceeding 30% of the paid up share capital of the company or 30% of its own paid up share capital and reserves, whichever is less. So this particular provision of Banking Regulation Act has to be complied whenever we have to consider limits on banks' exposure to the capital market. However, there is an exception as provided in subsection 1 of section 19 of the Act, which also needs to be looked into. Now let us look at the regulatory limit. What do you mean by regulatory limit? We have a solo basis as well as on a consolidated basis. When we talk about solo basis, the aggregate exposure for bank to the capital market in all forms, fund-based as well as non-fund-based, should not exceed 40% of its net worth as of March 31 of the previous year. And when we talk about consolidated basis, the aggregate exposure of a consolidated bank to capital markets, both fund-based and non-fund-based, should not exceed 40% of its consolidated net worth as on March 31 of the previous year. So the previous slide we saw about a statutory limit. This is regulatory limit, which again has a specific mention of solo and the consolidated basis. There are certain items that are excluded from the capital market exposure, and these items are banks, investment in owned subsidiaries, joint ventures, sponsored regional rural banks, investment in shares and convertible debentures, convertible bonds issued by institutions forming crucial financial infrastructure, such as the National Securities Depositories Limited, the Central Depositories Services Limited, etc. Next important exclusion comes from the Tier 1 and Tier 2 debt instruments issued by other banks. Then comes the investment in certificate of deposits of other banks, preference shares, non-convertible debentures and non-convertible bonds, units of mutual funds and the schemes where the corpus is invested exclusively in debt instruments. These are the items that are excluded from the capital market exposures. There are some more items which are excluded from the capital market exposure, such as the shares that are acquired by bank as a result of conversion of the debt or overdue interest into equity under the corporate debt restructuring mechanism, the term loans sanctioned to Indian promoters for acquisition of equity in overseas joint ventures or wholly owned subsidiaries under the refinance scheme of the Export-Import Bank of India, own underwriting commitments, as also the underwriting commitments of their subsidiaries through the books running process for the purpose of arriving at a capital market exposure of the solo bank as well as a consolidated bank, the promoter shares in the SPV of an infrastructure project that is pledged to the lending bank for infrastructure project lending, and finally the bank's exposure to brokers under the currency derivative segment. So now let us understand how we compute the exposure. For computing the exposure of the capital markets, loans, advances, sanctions and guarantees issued for the capital market operations would be reckoned. And this would be reckoned with reference to the sanction limits or the outstanding, whichever is higher. In the case of fully drawn term loans, where there is no scope for redrawal of any portion of the sanction limits, banks may reckon the outstanding as the exposure. Further, the bank's direct investment into shares or convertible bonds, convertible debentures, and the units of equity-oriented mutual funds would be calculated at the cost price. We also need to understand what happens in case of an intraday exposure. At present, there are no explicit guidelines for monitoring the bank's intraday exposure to the capital markets, which are inherently risky. It has been decided that the board of each bank would evolve a policy for fixing the intraday limit. So it would be at the disposal of the board to decide as to what should be the bank's policy relating with the exposure of intraday limits, and they will be putting in place an appropriate system to monitor such limits on an ongoing basis. Next, we have to understand whether such limits can be enhanced, whether there is any enhancement in limits possible. Banks having sound internal controls and robust risk management system can approach the Reserve Bank of India for higher limits with a proper explanation to get those higher limits sanctioned from Reserve Bank of India. There are certain prudential limits on the intra-group exposures, like quantity limits on the financial ITEs, and prudential measures for the non-financial ITEs have been imposed to contain the concentration and the contagion risk. So we also have certain level of limits on the intra-group exposure. Now we need to see the norms for financing of equities and the investment in shares. This year we first consider advances in shares to the individuals, loans against security of shares, convertible bonds, convertible debentures and units of equity-oriented mutual funds to the individuals from the banking system should not exceed the limit of rupees 10 lakhs per individual if the securities are in the physical form, and rupees 20 lakhs per individual if the securities are in a demat form. So for physical shares, the limit is 10 lakhs, and for those shares that are held in the demat form, securities held in the demat form, the limit is rupees 20 lakhs. Such loans are meant for genuine individual investors and banks should not support collusive activities by a large group of individuals. So these are basically for the purpose of the benefit of an individual, but it should not be used for or misused for any other purpose. Banks should formulate, with the approval of the board of directors, a loan policy for granting advances to individuals against the shares, debentures and the bonds, but this should be keeping in view with the Reserve Bank of India guidelines. Now let us see how the financing can happen with relation to the IPOs, that is the initial public offerings. Banks may grant advances to individuals for subscribing to the IPOs. So here this possibility is there for financing individuals for subscribing to the IPOs. Loans advances to any individual from a banking system against security of shares, convertible bonds, convertible debentures, units of equity oriented mutual funds and the PSU bond should not exceed the limit of rupees 10 lakhs for subscribing to the IPO. So this limit has to be adhered to, especially for subscribing to the IPOs, that is the initial public offerings. The corporate should not be extended credit limits for by the banks for exposure in other companies' IPOs. Similarly, banks should not provide finance to NBFCs for further lending to individuals for IPOs. So these are specific restrictions over and above the restrictions for individuals. Banks can also finance to assist employees to buy shares of their own companies. Banks may extend finance to employees for purchasing shares of their own companies under the Employee Stock Option Plan, that popularly known as the ESOP, reserved by way of employees' quota under the IPO to the extent of 90% of the purchase price of the shares or rupees 20 lakhs, whichever is lower. So this is a restriction especially for financing to the employees for actually subscribing to the ESOPs. Advances against shares to the stockbrokers and market makers. Now let's see what are the limits prescribed for such category. Banks are free to provide credit facilities to the stockbrokers and the market makers on the basis of their commercial judgment within the policy framework approved by their respective boards. So this liberty is there, and however there is a condition, however, in order to avoid any nexus emerging between the interconnected stockbroking activities in the bank, the board of each bank should fix within the overall ceiling limit of 40% of the net worth as on March 31st of the previous year, a sub-ceiling for total advances to all the sub-brokers and the market makers, both based, fund-based and non-fund-based, and to any single stockbroking activity, including its associates or interconnected companies. And further, banks should not extend the credit facilities directly or indirectly to the stockbrokers or the arbitrage operators or operations in the stock exchanges. When we consider the bank's financing to individuals and in shares to joint holders or third party beneficiaries, we also need to see what are the limits posed under such criteria. While granting advances against shares held in the joint names to the joint holders or the third party beneficiaries, banks should be circumspect and ensure that the objective of the regulation is not defeated. So if it should be for genuine purpose and not to defeat the objectives of the regulations. By granting advances to the joint holders or third party beneficiaries or to circumscribing above limits placed on loans or advances against shares and the securities specified above. So whenever it is financing done to the joint holders or third party beneficiaries, this particular aspect has to look into by the banks that it should not be for the purpose of defeating the regulation or circumventing any other provisions of law. We can also have advances against units of mutual funds. Banks should adhere to certain guidelines while financing against the units of mutual funds. These guidelines are: the units should be listed on the stock exchange, or repurchase facility of units should be available at the time of lending. Secondly, the units should have completed the minimum lock-in period stipulated in the relevant scheme. Thirdly, the amount of advances should be linked to the net asset value or repurchase price of the market value, whichever is less, and not to the face value of the units. Next, the advances should be purpose-oriented, taking into account the credit requirements of the investor and not to boost the sales of other schemes. So this particular guidelines have to be adhered when the financing has to be done against the units of the mutual funds. Let's see bank's loan for financing promoters' contributions. What are the guidelines on this particular aspects? Such loans should also be subject to the individual or group borrowers' exposure norms as well as the statutory limits on shareholdings in the company. So this particular category is considered, has to consider all these norms, both statutory as well as the general individual and group exposure norms that we have seen in our previous slides. Now let us see what are the norms that are applicable to margin trading. Banks may extend finance to stockbrokers for margin trading. The board of each bank should formulate the detailed guidelines for lining of margin trading subject to certain parameters. That is, the finance extended for margin trading should be within the overall ceiling of 40% of the net worth prescribed for exposure to the capital market. Next, the margin or the minimum margin of 50% should be maintained on the funds lent for margin trading. Third important guideline is the shares purchased with the margin trading should be in a dematerialized mode under the pledge of the lending bank. And fourthly, the bank's board should prescribe the necessary safeguards to ensure that no nexus develops between the interconnected stockbroking entities or stockbrokers and the bank in respect of the margin trading. There are some more guidelines on margin trading. That is, the audit committee of the board should monitor periodically and ensure compliance with guidelines formulated by the board of the bank's exposure by way of financing for margin trading. And banks should also disclose the total finance extended for margin trading in the notes on accounts to the balance sheet of the bank. Now let us see about the cross-holding of capital amongst the banks or the financial institutions. What are the norms applicable for this particular category? Banks or the financial institutions' investments in instruments which we are specified in this slide, which are issued by other banks or financial institutions, are eligible for capital status for investee bank or FI. However, it should not exceed 10% of the investing bank's capital funds, that is Tier 1 and Tier 2. And the instruments that are allowed in this category are the equity shares, the preference shares eligible for the capital status, the subordinate debt instruments, the hybrid debt capital instruments, as well as any other instrument that is approved in the nature of capital. The second important guidelines under this particular category of cross-holding of capital amongst the banks or the financial institutions is, banks or the financial institutions should not acquire any fresh stake in a bank's equity shares if by such acquisition the investing banks or financial institutions holding exceeds the 5% of the investee bank's equity capital. And third important guidelines in this category is, the banks or the financial institution equity holding in another bank held under provisions of a statute will be outside the purview of the ceilings that are prescribed here. Now let us understand an important aspect which we call it as a safety net scheme for public issues of shares, debentures, etc. Here Reserve Bank of India has observed that some banks there or their subsidiaries were providing buyback facilities under the name of safety net schemes in respect of certain public issue as part of their merchant banking activities. And under such schemes, large exposure were assumed by way of commitments to buy the relative securities from the original investor at any time during a stipulated period at a price determined at the time of issue, irrespective of the prevailing market price. So this is an aspect we have to consider, and RBI has considered what we call it as a safety net. In some cases, such schemes were offered suo motu without any request from the company's issues were supported under the schemes, and banks and their subsidiaries for this, after this instance, were advised that they should refrain from offering such safety net facilities by whatever name called, because such safety net facilities should not be misused. We have a provision for buyback facilities also. In some cases, the issuers provide the buyback facilities to the original investors up to Rs. 40,000 in respect of non-convertible debentures and this happens after a lock-in of 1 year, specifically to provide liquidity to the debentures issued by them. So liquidity is a main aspect of this buyback facility. If at the request of the issuer, the banks or their subsidiaries find it necessary to provide additional facilities to small investors subscribing to such new issues, such a buyback arrangement should not entail commitments to buy the securities at a predetermined price. Prices should be determined from time to time, keeping in view the prevailing stock market prices of the securities. A commitment should also be limited to a moderate portion of the total issue in terms of the amount and should not exceed 20% of the own funds of the banks and their subsidiaries. These commitments will also be subject to the overall exposure limits which have been or may be prescribed from time to time. Thank you.